Never made it as a wise man. I couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing. Tired of living like a blind man. I'm sick of sight without a sense of feeling. And this is how you remind me. This is how you remind me of what I really am. This is how you remind me. So bad, 'cause living with me must have damn near killed you. And this is how you remind me of what I really am. This is how you remind me. Stealing, and this is how you remind me. This is how you remind me. This is how you remind me.
To say that I've been looking forward to doing this interview would be putting it sort of slightly mildly. I remember exactly what I was doing. It was an afternoon in, I think it was 2000, it might have been, and I was having a cup of tea, and I got MTV or something playing in the background, and that came on. And I was like, A, what is that sound? B, who is this model? What is that group? It was Nickelback. It started the whole ball rolling. And Nickelback has been, as Ryan Reynolds says in the brilliant video, which I advise you to go see, it's the biggest, one of the biggest selling bands of all time. Massive support. And is the subject of a new documentary called, or just came out last week, called Hate to Love Nickelback. Delighted to say that joining me live on the line from somewhere on a private island, I imagine, sipping margaritas, is Mike Kroger from Nickelback. Mike, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you. Where in the world are you, sir?
Today, you'll find me in British Columbia, Canada, which actually these days, it's looking pretty good. The sun's actually coming up, and it's been relatively warm. But no, unfortunately, no sand, no margarita for me today. It's all work. We're actually playing a big rock festival here in Vancouver tonight.
Oh, to be. Is this something... Because, I mean, when you mention Kid, I've got a book called History of Canadian Rock. It's got Neil Young. It's got you guys. It's got just trying to Rush, of course, in there. Is there, yes. A friend of mine, he was in Geddy's high school, and Geddy came back and did a talk or something, which has been quite something. Yeah, I mean, there is a certain, isn't there? There is a huge difference, and you guys have had to work to put, to say, as we say in English, bloody hard. We're putting it mildly, because you come from not one of the rock and roll centers. You're not from Toronto. You're not from Vancouver. You were from somewhere basically a little more, should we say, remote than that?
Yeah, you could say that. Effectively, you had to. Where we grew up, you'd have to get in your car and drive 2 hours in most directions to find civilization. We were really, really out in the weeds where we grew up, which was kind of good. It's cool to grow up in a small town and come from a small town. I think it equips you with a little bit of a different mindset when you go out there in the world.
One of the things is this, I find it really interesting about this, it's because of all the bands, and I've spoke to sort of, Black Crowes, Jane's Addiction or stuff, and they can have some lovers and some haters, but for some strange and unknown reason, people seem to think, especially on that their internet thing, that you guys sprung fully formed and just sort of weaseled your way into our consciousness. And if anybody knows anything about music, they know the incredible amount of hard work it takes, especially in the late 90s, early noughties, when there wasn't such a thing as the internet as there is now, and YouTube and TikTok and that thing, to actually get your name, get your head above the parapet.
Yeah, you hear about the overnight success. Most of them are 10 years in the making. It's never as easy as it looks, believe me. It sounds like you have a little bit better idea than most about what it takes, but it was an overnight success, about 6 years in the making in our case, which, 6 years of effectively hopelessly throwing ourselves at music, with no prospect of success or any kind of financial remuneration for sure. So you get given a lot of opportunities to quit, because it is kind of hard in the beginning when you're putting out your heart and soul and effectively getting back goodwill, which is cool. You just can't eat it. And we really struggled for a long time, and there was a lot of years in the beginning when you're sitting there going, we're still working for free, or we're investing with other people's money because we don't have any, and you don't know if it's going to work. And luckily, the event you're talking about, that song How You Remind Me, popped and got out there, and it was just the right song at the right time, and the world was looking for it. We really, we did our best. We always do our best, but it's that timing you can't control.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of a friend of mine who works in the biz in Australia. And I said to her when we were in London, and I said to her, God, your bands are really, really good. And she says, yeah, but you must have, these guys have got like 10 years of touring in Australia in the middle of nowhere. So when they hit the scene, they're really tight. Those weren't the words she used. But because they have been playing together for such a long time, doing these gigs in places that you wouldn't, if you could find a cat, you could throw it around a bit. So when they make it to an LA or a New York or a London, the reason they're so good is the fact that they know each other and they know what they're doing in and out, and they've honed their stagecraft and their music craft.
Yes, you're right about that. You really get to know your band in a way that it's pretty hard to explain. You become a family of sorts, a gang of sorts. It's a lot of fun, and it's definitely especially in the beginning when there is no hope for any kind of breakthrough. It's the thing to do when you're young. Most definitely, being poor and homeless is best done young.
Yeah, I think that should be a t-shirt. You can have that as a range of merch, Mike, I think, for the next Nickelback gig. But I just want, before we get to the documentary, which is, I've seen little bit clips of it. I haven't seen the whole thing yet, but it's really opened my eyes. And I, as I said before off air, I'm a fan anyway. But with How You Remind Me, what's it like to have a song like that that absolutely takes off like a ballistic missile, and you're sort of hanging on to it?
Well, it was You could describe it as just like trying to ride a wild horse that you've been trying to catch for 5, 6, 7 years. You finally catch that horse, get on, and then that thing takes off, and instead of trying to enjoy the ride, you're just trying to hang on. And that's basically what happened. And we had the funniest thing happen shortly after. The arc of How You Remind Me, we were presented with an award, is World Music Award, which we didn't even know there was World Music Awards, but we got a World Music Award in 2000, and I think it was 2002 because it reflected the year prior. But we got an award for the most played single in the world. And we were just like, they handed us these trophies, and we were just looking at them going, this is hard to understand.
Yeah, and just quick before I go back, the model. Now, I spoke to you about off air, but because I respect the musicianship. Obviously, that spoke to me first off, Mike. But I mean, whatever happened to the model?
Well, whatever happened to her, I'm not totally sure. I'm not sure if our video was the high watermark of her career. I certainly hope not. But, I'm not sure exactly. As I told you before we started to roll, we have had her and her family come out to rock shows, but haven't really caught up on her career trajectory.
Okay, fair enough. Now, this film, Hate to Love, Nickelback, what point, was it something you wanted to get across? Were you approached to do it? What was the genesis of this? How did it all come about?
It's a very funny genesis. We first started this by wanting to make interview type footage for the promotion of the album Feed the Machine. And we looked at the interview footage after we did it, because we did it ourselves. That's the other thing. We didn't have we had that set up at our video shoot for the song Song on Fire, and we looked at the footage and we looked at it and thought, that's a little bit too good to just throw as a commercial. We were actually for whatever reason, that first day of shooting, we were really opening up on camera and giving good interview, as they say, and we decided maybe we should hold on to it. And then we just started shooting for, geez, it had to be close to 7 years. We would just shoot, some interviews or shoot a concert or whatever, and cobble it all together. And it just turned into a documentary. We didn't really start off intending to do this, but it was a really fun ride. And the more we shot, the better it got. So we just kept going. And finally, we've released it. So it's hard to believe it's finished.
It's really interesting to see those early clips, when we've all got those hairstyles that we've got hair. I'm a member of this, what can we say? Welcome to the party, people. But it's looking like we did back then, but also it's getting some of the things that makes it interesting. It's not just a bunch of musicians going, or other musicians going, how great you are or whatever. It's the family and the friends. And considering the sort of bile you got laid off by the haters, I mean, the story itself, if it was another band, they'd be going, Chad, because it says, Chad was kind of getting in trouble. You were all from, none of you were from rich rock and roll background. It's certainly, certainly not Nepo babies.
Yeah, definitely none of that. We didn't have any of those edges or advantages that we could use. We were we were all cold calls from the beginning. So we didn't have anybody to lean on or any kind of side door way into the music business or whatever. We just had to write the best songs we could write and tour incessantly and play every show we could, and no show too small, no paycheck too small, just do everything and. That's it worked for us. We know how blessed we are, because it doesn't work for a lot of people, and a lot of really talented and gifted people it doesn't work for. So we feel really, really fortunate to have gotten a good ride out of this thing.
Who were your influences when you were writing and putting stuff down and trying to get that difficult second album out of the way? Who were the guys that inspired you guys?
Well, we there was a lot of Canadian bands that we were really into that, you know, you being where you are, probably haven't heard of. But there, you know, there's cult heroes like the Tragically Hip. That's a band from Canada that was, you know. It is surreal to think that the people listening to this most likely never even heard of the Tragically Hip. They are such an archetype of a rock band from Canada. They, you know, them and there were others, you know, of maybe lesser statures that weren't necessarily legends in Canada. But there, you know, of course, there's things like Metallica and all that. You know, we're all kind of really like the hard rock music, you know, so we like things like that and grew up with that, Guns N' Roses, and saw, you know, that was sort of the advent of sort of hard rock in arenas. And we, you know, it was cool to go to those shows and see that you can actually do this, you know, to see people that, you know, you're looking at them and it's, well, those are just, they're just people, right? They're no different than anybody else. What, you know, why not? Why not us? You know,
luckily
we got there.
You know, you talk about bands that people never heard of. There's, you know, there are bands in the music business, the people who write the music press or whatever, think it's great to like this trendy band that nobody have heard of. And it's, you know, and you might not like them, but I'm a music critic, so I know better. And therefore, you know, and we've got a thing called the Mercury Award in the UK. Yeah. And I think that's cursed because anybody, it's normally run by some grime artist in a backstreet in Bradford, and they get this big album, you know, they win the Mercury Prize, and you never hear them again. It's like the curse. I don't know if they're still, but you know, they just disappear. However, you guys, I mean, I play awful guitar, but there's something being on stage, and it's called connection with an audience. And
yeah,
right, off you go.
The two points you just made are absolutely correct. And when we first came up, I remember we were given an award, you know, the Canadian music industry has an award show called the Juno Awards. And we, you know, when we first started to pop through, we were nominated and we won the award for best new group. And you know, my understanding at that point was that this is effectively the kiss of death and your career is over. And you know, so we accepted that award, and I actually did thank them for the kiss of death and trying to finish us off at the time. I kind of took a sarcastic tone to it, but you know, that's you know, fortuitous or whatever you want to call it. But a big part is also what you mentioned about connecting with an audience. Like you say, we're never going to stop. You know, we're never going to stop. We're still never going to stop. We were never going to stop. So I don't know if people, you know, started to like our band or just gave up. You know, maybe we just wore them out.
Well, the resistance is Nickelback, resistance is futile, that sort of thing.
It's never going to quit. Yeah, just accept it.
But the other thing is the fact that you didn't do quite, you know, you became, you know, as you know, as this, as, and please go and check out Ryan Reynolds because he's brilliant. But what is it? Most successful rock band of the decade, quote unquote, Billboard, I think, said. But you haven't become like Motley Crue. You know, there was no Nikki Sixx behavior going on, at least not that we saw. And therefore, the audience can connect with you because they are, do you know what I mean? That they see you and they know that you're, you know, rock gods, okay? But they also can recognize themselves in you. And that's an incredibly difficult trick, not a trick, but a thing to pull off to get that, you know, that, again, the connection between the band and the audience.
We come from a very blue collar background. We come from a place where people, you know, go to work. You know, we don't come from Hollywood. We don't come from, you know, a big city with a fabulous scene. We come from a really gritty, simple work ethic kind of upbringing. So we brought that to rock and roll. And, you know, we really, from the very, very beginning, you know, there was a real a lot of people wanted us to really cultivate an image and have a look, so to speak. And, you know, we really pushed back on that. We didn't want to be known for our outfits or whatever. You know, we wanted to be known more for the music. And so we kind of, we were swimming upstream a little bit on that because you know, everybody wants you to have an angle and a gimmick, and we've never really done that. And I think that that can kind of lead into some of that criticism or whatever you call it. You know, when you just look like everybody else, everybody looks at the band and goes, well, why these guys, you know, what's so special about them? And the answer is the songs, you know, but we aren't that different than our audience. Like when we're on stage playing and we look out there, we see ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what was it? Corporate rock. That was one of the things which I've never understood that one, because corporate rock would be people dressed in suits, surely, you know, doing, I mean, if you look corporate rock, I mean, what's coming out of Taylor Swift is going to be corporate. I'm not dissing Taylor Swift, but you know what I mean? That is music written by committee. But
the corporate rock thing is funny, because you hear people use that kind of phraseology, and like there's some kind of independent you know, voice in the wilderness that doesn't believe in corporations, and you know, it can get, oh boy, everybody's just such an idealist. I'm over it, man. It's okay. Yeah, I've lived my, you know, and we've all had our time with delusion, and it's a hell of a drug, but I'm trying to kick it.
There was a break, wasn't there? There was a five-year break, and there was some, I mean, Chad couldn't sing. Was it Chad couldn't sing or couldn't talk for a year? And you had, was it a mini stroke or a heart attack or something happened to you whilst you were working out, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, I had a near mortal stroke.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's cool. It's fine. It you know, ended up the same, but it got pretty close there. Just about didn't make it. They refused. You know, my wife, when I was in the hospital, my wife kept asking me every day if I was going to survive, and they wouldn't answer her. So, you know, things got a little dark there for about a couple of weeks, but, you know, out the other side and coming up on the 10th anniversary of that date. So, we got some celebrations to do.
And what's it like going out on the road now and having this, I mean, having this, because a lot of people won't know this story. I mean, okay, Died in the, you know, the real fans will know the story, but those who go, oh yeah, Nickelback, corporate rock, you remind me. Right. They maybe will see how hard you'd worked and the struggles that you've been through and the backstory, which is up there with every, you know, it's not a manufactured rock and roll story. It's not it's not a Nikki Sixx and a Tommy Lee story. It's not been manufactured. This is how it really is. So, did you hope that this would give A, the real fans something to enjoy and empathize with, and be the doubters, the haters, and the great unwashed, and the idea to see that, hey, you know, we're still out here while many sort of trendy bands who weren't have really cashed in their chips.
Well, I resent that the great unwashed comment, because those are our fans. So first of all, there's that. The documentary is you're spot on, though. Number one, it's an opportunity to tell our story. You know, it really, really is. And I do feel that maybe perhaps some of the vitriol that we've, you know, been delivered is because we didn't craft a narrative complete enough. You know, maybe we didn't tell our own story enough. So in the absence of a strong narrative, people are going to make up their own, and I feel like that could be our fault. But yeah, we just wanted to give our fans something to watch and see the inner story, that the stuff that they wouldn't know, like you just mentioned about, you know, my little brush with the man in the black pajamas there. This is stuff that people just otherwise wouldn't know, and we wanted to, you know, have a chance to tell our own story.
My little brush with the man in the black pajama. People think you're a Viet Cong agent or something if you say that one, Mike.
It's a little nod to the Big Lebowski, but that's sort of my ethos is the Big Lebowski.
Right. Well, hey, the dude abides. A couple of things though before I let you go, because I know you're busy. But one of them is how was when you first met Ryan Reynolds? Did he do the whole Wayne's World thing? Because like I said, I have laughed my ass off about that particular clip so many times.
So here's a funny one. We've still never met him.
What?
Yeah, the guy is. I've met people in government. I met people in business, you know, like really, really high level business, huge companies running empires. I have never met someone so busy as Ryan Reynolds. He is a perpetual motion machine. He's never in one place. Yeah, we never met him. You know, he's a huge fan. We're huge fans of his, but we still have not shared the same space.
You've not broken bread.
Who knows? Maybe tonight's the night. You know, we are playing in Vancouver, and you know, I know that he doesn't live full time in Vancouver, but he has deep ties to Vancouver. So who knows? Maybe he'll just turn up tonight. I don't know.
You'll either have to play Vancouver or Wrexham, the way it's going at the moment.
He's a sports magnate now. Yeah. It's interesting.
And finally on this one, one of my favorite videos, Rockstar of all time, and I'm going to play out with that. But was that fun to get in contact with people and say, because you know Billy Gibbons, that's the whole list of people getting there are fans in there. There's you know there's Kid Rock in there. I mean there's quite a lineup. That must have been fun getting them all organized to get them to do the video itself. And it's one of the best songs.
It was, you know, when we first sat down and wrote the lyrics of that song, the target was absurdity. So we reached the target of absurdity. And then when it came time to shoot a video, we're like, yeah, you know, let's continue. Let's continue on the path of absurdity. And yeah, that's why you see some of those people, you know, some of those, you know, music stars and stuff and athletes that we realistically didn't expect any of them to say yes, but they did. And it, you know, it was really fun and it's turned into kind of a thing. I'd like to do it again. You know, I'd like to write a Rockstar 2.0 or something and have a new crop of fun people to make a video with. That would be a blast.
I'm putting my hand up for my bit from Marbella, just so you know. Are you coming to, I know you're playing in Vancouver. Are you coming to Europe? Are you coming to Spain anytime in the near future?
We do not have a Spain visit on our European tour that's coming up. We begin in the United Kingdom in mid-May, and we play through Europe into mid-June. Right. But unfortunately, we're not coming to your sun-kissed shores.
I can get a flight. We can get a flight to London. It's only 2.5 hours. You guys do that for breakfast, for goodness sake.
This is the beauty of Europe. You can be in another country, you know, every afternoon if you like. It's not like North America, quite as spread out as that.
Mike, I know you're a busy man. Listen, I advise strongly. In fact, I order you out listening out there to go off and find Hate to Love Nickelback. It's on worldwide release, isn't it? You can find it via various streaming engines, I should imagine, Mike. Yeah.
Yes, sir. It's going to be out there in sort of the space where you can rent and buy things imminently, and then hopefully we'll be on one of the big streamers soon enough.
Right. Well, go forth and order it, get it, watch it, however you can. Go and buy some Nickelback vinyl as well. Mike Kroger, it's been an absolute honor, really has, to speak to you. I'm going to play out with Rockstar. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, my brother.